This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon, this is Live and Learn on The Bigger Picture, and I'm Juliet Jacobs. We're continuing our collaboration with the Freedom Film Network, showcasing films from their archives. And this week, the film Al-Fatiha Mamali is the chosen pick, and the film follows two singer-songwriters, Black and Muir, as they journey to Kampung Mamali over in Kedah to try and make sense of a massacre that took place there back in 1985. So the film's director, Rahmat Harun, joins me now to tell me more about that very much forgotten incident and tragedy in our nation's history, and to share what transpired after and why he made a film about it. Welcome, Rahmat. How are you today?
Good. Thank you.
Thank you so much for joining me today. It's a real pleasure for me to chat with you. Maybe we can just start very quickly. I love to do this with all the guests I interview for this segment. Can we get to know you a bit better? I mean, I've known you personally as a poet, as an artist, but you know, an old Malaysia Kini article that I was reading, I think you put it very succinctly and you said, I've had various work experiences, you know, poet, writer, artist, all of that. How would you describe the work that you've been doing and what you're currently doing now?
Yeah, I was a full-time artist for the past, I never worked for 20 years until 2017. I worked full-time with Malaysia Kini, working as their sub-editor for BM Desk, yeah. Okay. So that's what I am now.
Okay. And in a previous life, I mean, I remember I used to work for Kaki Seni and I used to see you at all the arts events, you know, doing poetry, doing art. You've even been a radio journalist, am I correct?
Yes, I was. That was back then in 2001, 2002 with RadikRadio.com. It was so-called the first independent radio program in Malaysia, but it was online, yeah. Back then, yeah.
Okay, all right, cool. But are you still pursuing art? Are you still, you know, dabbling in art and poetry and those sorts of things?
Yes, I'm still doing it and still participating in art and poetry, but not as full-time as it was before, yeah.
Okay, all right. And I guess, you know, today we want to talk about your endeavor as a director of a film, right? And of course, that film is Al-Fatiha Mamali. I guess before we talk about the film itself, maybe you can tell us a little bit about what is known as the Mamali incident, or codenamed Operasi Ankara, right? And that was a huge incident which happened back almost 36 years ago, right? Back in 1985.
Yes.
Tell me about that. You know, what was that incident all about?
So back then, November 1985. So Mamali is the name of the village. So there was a siege by authorities on the side of the police. They said involved a force of 500 police personnel, and on the side of the villagers, they claimed more, maybe 2,000. And the siege left 18 villagers, including the leader, Ibrahim Libya, and four policemen dead, with more than hundreds injured. And I think another 200 more civilians, children, women, the villagers, they were detained without trial after the incident. So the incident happened because the religious leader, or past leader actually, Ibrahim Mahmud, known as Ibrahim Libya, because he studied in Libya during his master, I think, yeah. Because his first degree in Deoband in India, he studied, I think, Islamic Sharia. And when he came back in Malaysia, early 70s, he's working with the government. He was a JPM religious officer. And I think 1976 something, he resigned and focusing on Islamic propagation, da'wah, And he set up a religious school in Mamali, near his childhood village, Kampung Caro Putih, which is like beside Mamali. Mm-hmm. And what happened was his influence becoming bigger and bigger. And I think he leads 78 general election or 1982. He was contested under PAS. And then he was actively involved with PAS. And yeah, the thing happened in back in November 1985. The police tried to detain him under the ISA, and he refused to surrender. So because he refused to surrender, and yeah, and then that was the history, and there was a siege, and things happened. Yeah.
Yeah.
And yeah.
Yeah, sorry, I was just going to say, you did mention that he was with PAS at the time, right? Maybe you can remind us what the political climate was at the time. So if I'm correct, PAS had sort of moved away from UMNO. They were an alliance, but then, you know, UMNO and PAS broke away, and then they started fighting with each other at that point in time, right? So there was a lot of antagonism between the two parties during that time. Am I correct?
Okay, that was earlier on. I think in the 80s, how would I say? I cannot say extremism, but I think it happened earlier on, you know, with Amanat Haji Hadi, I think 1982. Yeah. So it's about, there's a division, you know, between UMNO and PAS, and the division becoming religious.
Right.
That happened in Terengganu, where they have a separate imam, separate mosque. Mm. And some cannot even eat, a slaughtered animal from UMNO. So, yeah, that was the story
Wow.
back then. And I'm not sure that's happening in Mamali, you know, because I think Mamali is a different kind of story, because it's a very rural area, and I think they were just like becoming hysterical, you know, when suddenly they were under siege. Mm. And I did the film in 2009, and that was very shallow, because it's not like I'm digging deeper on the issues, because back then there was not much information, you know. Mm. But I think after I did the film in 2011, if I'm not mistaken, the former OCPD of Bali, Tunku Muzaffar Shah, Tunku Ibrahim, he came out with a book, Mamali, a Policeman, Remember.
That's right.
So, yeah. So he said that there was a political interference, and there's a miscalculation of a higher official from Bukit Aman, that they underestimate Ibrahim's follower.
Right.
So, yeah. But when I did the documentary, and when I met the villagers, my idea is just to compare with the white paper, you know, produced in Parliament.
Which was in 1986, right?
Yes, in 1986, the white paper. So because in that white paper, the government said they justify the action against Ibrahim because he wanted to do something like, you know, revolutionary Islamic movement, who wanted to overthrow government by violence. And when I met the villagers, in fact, some of his follower, who later became a senator, Yusof Hussein, he debunked those justification that put on the white paper. He said, in fact, because of Ibrahim Ibrahim's religious background and working with authority, he in fact the reference, the book that he used, is Kitab Mustika Hadis, which is produced by Prime Minister Department. So that was like Ibrahim Libya teaching, which is Kitab Mustika Hadith, is like, you know, a basic fardhu ain, like, you know, prayers, things like fasting, pilgrimage, and, you know, ethics, how to be like a good Muslim. and so things like that.
Not at all deviant teachings, right?
Yeah, not as what stated in the white paper. Mm-hmm. So, and in fact, if I'm not mistaken, Yusuf Hussein, when he was a senator, he managed to raise up the issue. I think the speaker himself that time, I cannot remember what year, I think early 2000 something, Abdul Hamid Pawante, he was asking his experience, Yusuf Hussein experience.
As an ISA detainee,
yeah,
right?
as an ISA detainee. Mm. And he was mentioning, it's put on the record, on the Hansard.
That's right.
Of the Senate. Not only like he was detained, the political people were detained. The villagers, including women and children also, they were detained without trial under the ISA. And another point was when Ibrahim Libya working for the government as a prime minister, department religious officer, he did posting. He worked in Kamunting Detention Center, which is a detention center for ISA detainees.
Right.
I think that experience early on, working as a religious officer in the political prisoners detention center, made him maybe later on hesitant and, you know, don't want to surrender.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean,
yeah.
ISA.
But I cannot deny there's a religious, of course, for these people, is for this is my interpretation of the event that Ibrahim Libya refused to surrender under the ISA. But for them, for these people, it could be jihad, you know. It's like for them, these are, a holy, holy thing, yeah.
Okay. I guess, you know, my question is, right, why was Ibrahim Mahmud so feared, and who was it that actually feared him so much?
In the documentary, according to a few villagers and a few of his followers, he said, I'm no baling himself. Because before Ibrahim Libya joined PAS, he was freely, you know, he was a pendakwa, Islamic propagator. So he moved around, you know, he moved around and everybody welcoming him. In fact, from even UMNO people that time.
Mm-hmm.
So because that time he didn't show his political allegiance yet.
Okay.
Only later on, if I'm not mistaken, 78 or 1982, he contested underpass, and that's when the reactions they were like started to react negatively towards him. This one, according to the villagers.
Okay, if I remember correctly, also like what I read, he lost by a very small margin, you know, to UMNO. So I think it was like only a few hundred votes, even, you know. So I guess he was gaining in popularity, and you know, he was a political threat, I suppose, right? It's quite crazy, right? The sort of reaction to him, you know, the kind of like siege that happened. It's really quite, you know, watching the news, watching your film, and you know, the news footage that you show. It's so shocking to watch it in this day and age that this actually happened right here in Malaysia, with, you know, a shootout and, you know, people being like just murdered in their homes. It's really quite insane when you look at it.
Yeah, there were like the operation Operasi Ankara. It involved armored personnel carrier, you know, like tank. anti-riot vehicle. And I was imagining if I was a villager that time, let's say midnight, a night before the siege, you already know like your village surrounded. Of course, you're becoming like more hysterical. And Ibrahim Libya have this belief that he don't want to surrender under the ISA. And yeah, and the villagers is supporting him. So there must be, you know, there must be other ways than the next morning we just, you know, storm them, you know.
Yeah.
You can just stop their supplies, food supplies, and many other things. And I think that's what the point that's made very important by Tunku Muzaffar Shah books later on. And he said that's
right.
There's some miscalculation, you know, about,
Yeah. Okay. All right. I'm speaking today to Rahmat Harun. He's the director of the film Al-Fatiha Mamali. It is the chosen film for the Freedom Film Network's weekend watch with Freedom Film Fest, and the film is being re-released on YouTube this weekend. We're going to find out more after this quick break. You're listening to Live and Learn on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Saya sendiri sebagai mangsa dalam kejadian ini, apabila terus ditahan, dibawa, ditiarapkan di atas jalan raya, digari tangan ke belakang, lalu dihumban ke dalam van, disembamkan muka di atas lantai van, dibawa ke balai polis Baling, ditelanjangkan, didera 3 hari 3 malam di soal siasat tanpa henti, yang menggambarkan saya ini seolah-olah seorang penjenayah yang begitu dahsyat, yang begitu besar. Inilah kerakusan pihak yang berkuasa untuk meneruskan ISA sanggup membunuh manusia yang begitu berguna, yang tinggi ilmu pengajiannya, yang berkemampuan untuk menyampaikan dakwah, dibunuh begitu saja dengan ISA. Dan peristiwa kes ini berlarutan sehinggalah dibawa ke mahkamah, sehinggalah 161 orang ditahan, termasuk kanak-kanak, termasuk wanita, termasuk golongan yang tua ditahan, dan akhirnya sebahagiannya dibebaskan. 36 orang diletakkan di bawah ISA.
Welcome back. This is Live and Learn on The Bigger Picture. I'm Juliet Jacobs. Joining me today is Rahmat Harun. He's the director of the film Al-Fatiha Mamali. The film is going to be re-released on the Freedom Film Network's YouTube channel, and we're finding out all about it. So Rahmat, before the break, you know, you shared who this man was, right? Who was so feared and was the cause of this huge incident, right? Ibrahim Mahmud, of course. Now let's talk about the film. So the film, of course, is called Al-Fatiha Mamali. And as you mentioned, it was made back in 2009, and it featured two singer-songwriters, Muir and Black, who I suppose were trying to comprehend all those incidents and what actually happened, right? What did you want when you were making this film? You know, what were your aims when you were setting out to make this?
Yeah, my aim to make it like simple to highlight the issues of the incident, the tragedy, because I think before we highlighted it in such a way, people always refer Mamali incident as a religious tragedy or just a past political party past event thing, you know, which is, I think, it can be more. And after I I listened to the song first. These two singer-songwriters, they were thinking of writing about the incident. Yeah? The Mamali incident. I thought, okay, maybe we can meet the villagers themselves, the wife of the Ibrahim, to see, you know, what's their views, what's their point of view. Because at the moment, every year, Mamali, what we listen is just political speeches by past president and things like that. And of course, on the other side is you have every election, you have RTM documentary about Mamali
really?
Incident.
Okay.
Yeah, it's an annual general election thing. Every time general election happens, so they will air the interview, the documentary. Yeah,
I didn't know that.
Yeah, when I was small, it was a shocking thing. You know, my idea when I see the RTM broadcast about the incident, my idea was like, oh, these people are just deviant, you know, mad people, crazy, and they just wanted to kill police, and just that. Mm-hmm. And until over the year, when I learned about the incident, and I have a different view. So the things, I cannot dig deeper because I don't have much information about it. And yeah, financially, you know, it's not like a big grant. But we are very thankful from Freedom Film Festival. So, because Mio and Black wanted to write song about it, I said, okay, let's make a journey about it. To make Memali incident as our background, mise en scène, but in the same time, we will highlight the event and try to create a new discourse, you know. And yeah, after that, Tunku Muzaffar came out with a book 2011, and I think 2014 or something, Musa Hitam also came out with a statement.
His memoirs, yeah.
Yeah, I think an interview somewhere. Musa said like Mahathir was in Malaysia during at the time Memali incident happened. So okay, back then to the creative process, yeah, that's it. So if you see the documentary, the first part of it is I just established Black and Mior, their activities, and there's one poetry event, I think. There was a Pak Samad Said reciting poetry, Pian Habib reciting poetry, and then Hishamuddin Rais have a stand-up comic. It was a political event thing, but involving artists and poets and musicians. So that was the first part. And then they met Yusof Hussein, which is, they say, Ibrahim Libya right-hand man, and then they interviewed Yusof Hussein, and then they went to the village, Memali. So that was a story. And at the end of it, they played their songs to the village, the villager. Yeah.
So it's sort of like, I guess, two musicians, two artists sort of interpretation. I mean, them doing a fact-finding mission of their own, speaking to different people involved, right?
Something and like
then,
that, yeah.
Yeah, and then creatively sort of like, I mean, it's a very beautiful song that they wrote, you know, following all of that, right? And we can hear that in the film, of course. I guess, you know, when you were making the film, like, was it hard to approach the villagers, you know, to get them to talk to you? I mean, were they very forthcoming? I mean, you had a very heartbreaking chat with his with Ibrahim Mahmud's wife, isn't it? You know, and she spoke about, you know, holding her dying husband and all of that. I mean, what was that like for you?
Well, it's very hard actually for me to.
Yeah, I can imagine.
But then the villager, they were like, how would I say it? They were very, very, very friendly, I would say. They very cooperative, and I think they are very honest. The way they speak, they are very honest. I don't think that they lie when they tell their stories.
Yeah.
But especially Ibrahim Libya's wife, our widow. Yeah. So she's very. Well, maybe I think it's their religious conviction. So when she told us her story, she's very calm, you know. She's very calm and not like emotional.
Not at all, yeah. Not hysterical or anything.
Not hysterical or anything. It's like she's very calm and
matter of fact, right?
Yes. Yeah, but she stated what happened during that incident, where the police came to her and pointed a gun, and then she was arrested later on. And then she told us some children also, they were made to make a false statement about the incident as well.
Yeah, it's really quite shocking. I mean, I confess I didn't know much about the Memali incident until I watched this and you know, went and read up about it. And yeah, it was really quite shocking to see. And everything was broadcast on RTM News. And you say that every year there was an anniversary of them replaying that as well on...
Not every year, I mean, every general election.
Every general election, sorry. Yes, every general election.
I think until 2008 or something, they didn't stop. I think that was 2008, that was the last... If I'm not mistaken, yeah. But every generation, it's like part of their campaign. So I don't know, now part of the government. So I don't know. Yeah.
Well, we'll see. I mean, GE15 is coming up soon. But I mean, when the film came out back in 2009, right? What was the sort of reaction to it? You know, were people shocked? You know, did people remember this incident? Was it something that, people remembered?
Yes, people remembered because... but people remember in a way that's not that I presented it. Not in the way that I presented it. People remember it, I think past people, they have a different narrative. Past members, past political parties, they always have a different narrative. So they believe Ibrahim Libya, they believe that he and his follower was Shahid. I don't know how.
Martyrs?
Martyrs. Yeah. So that was a past interpretation of the event. But I think public generally, we believe, you know, what the white paper said, the RTM documentaries about the event. We believe that these are just, you know, fanatic villagers went mad, you know, wielding parang and try to kill authorities. But I think after that, there's another narrative coming out. People start to dig more, to write more, and to speak more. And very important people, you know, like involved with the incident, like Tunku Muzaffar, former OCPD of Baling. So, because I think his book is very important.
Yeah.
Because he was the person who in charge of the ground, actually. He know better than whoever officer in Bukit Aman at that time.
Yeah.
Of course, later on, Musa Hitam also, you know, made a statement. So, I don't know. What truth about the incident, I don't really know. And if we wanted to know, we have to set up, you know, some commission, whatever, if you wanted to.
I think that also there's also something that is spoken about by the villagers who you guys interviewed, right? Because they said that justice was never served, lah. You know, nobody who was involved was ever questioned, or, you know, it was sort of like diketepikan lah. You know, it was just sort of sidelined and not spoken about after that, right? And not really brought up. Nobody was held responsible for it.
I think they filed a suit, the villager sued government. But I think that case being settled or caught something, I'm not sure.
I remember correctly, they were saying that, you know, Tun Mahathir is still alive, Tun Musa is still alive. But
yes.
Yeah, I mean, they weren't even called for questioning as such, right? So
yes,
there was no actual inquiry into the incident.
Because it's a blaming game also for these two politicians in a way, like, you know, Mahathir said Musa responsible. Musa said Mahathir responsible, and we don't know who is really responsible, you know, about the event.
Yeah,
but someone maybe has to be responsible, right?
You would think, yeah. It's a pretty huge incident. You know, people lost their lives. I mean, it was a siege, isn't it? It's really quite, it was to me very shocking. I keep saying that, but yeah, I was really quite shocked by it. I guess, you know, when you look back at the film now, Rama, you know, for those who are going to come to the film for the first time, what do you hope they're going to, I guess, take away from it, right? What do you hope that they will garner from it?
My hope is for them to be, you know, we have to be critical in the way we interpret or read information, even though it's from the authority, from the government. And another thing is, I think it's a record of an era that's gone, you know. That era is gone already. That era of information that being controlled by government. Only government, one RTM documentary, control narrative of an event. I think that's the interesting part of it compared to now. The social media era is different. I don't think so. That Memali incident can be happen again now in this era.
I think it is interesting to note that I think the villagers who you guys spoke to also did say that there was the era of fake news then, right, as well, because there was a lot of fake news being spread about Ibrahim himself, which is why he was branded like a deviant, lah, I suppose, right? That, to me, that was very interesting. I was like, fake news had its own sort of movement even back then.
But then there's you know, back then, you know, broadcasting, news media, it's only
state sanctioned.
Only state owns it, you know.
Yeah.
And even you need a license for radio and television. So every year they'll check your TV, your radio, whether you have license or not. So, and now with internet, I think that's information monopoly by on certain party, by government, is over. So I think that's part is, I hope, for maybe new generation, you know, so they can reflect on that. Yeah. And it's the incident, of course, is a tragedy, and we should think about it, you know. Yeah.
Okay, well, thank you so much for joining me today. I've been speaking to Rahmat Harun. He's the director of the film Al-Fatihah Mamali, which again is going to be re-released on the Freedom Film Network's YouTube channel this weekend. Do catch it. It's a really interesting look at a part of our Malaysian history, actually. So yeah, do catch that on the Freedom Film Fest YouTube channel. And if you miss any part of today's interview, you can always search for the podcast at bfm.my/learn, or you can find it on the BFM app. This has been Live and Learn on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.